Welcome to the Gospel Rain podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain conversation.
Thanks for joining us today on the Gospel Rain podcast. Excited you're back with us. Mike and I want to take an opportunity for a few moments. We've told you in previous podcasts about some conferences that we had planned to attend. Usually these conferences are oriented around pastors and ministers, not necessarily, but there are a lot of pastors who attend these, and so we wanted to take a few minutes and talk about two of them in particular that we've attended. One of them was just several weeks ago, was the MLK 50 conference in Memphis, and we were able to go together and spend some time together, fellowshipping together, which was always, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. Get a chance to catch up with some other brothers and eat some great food, some barbecues, some other things like that. So that was always good. But we got a chance to hear some speakers, and we're going to talk just a little bit through that, sort of process that a little bit. I don't know about you, Mike, I'm still processing some of that. I'm still thinking through some of the stuff that I heard. That's a big deal, and that conference was, I think, a good conference. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think overall the benefits of that conference was good. And so also, Micah had an opportunity just recently, got back from T4G conference, Together for the Gospel, and I didn't get a chance to go to that one, but I'm interested in hearing Micah's thoughts on that. I've just seen a lot of social media posts and some stuff out there about what was done and the sermons that were preached and all that kind of good stuff. So I'm excited to hear your thoughts. And we want to take a few minutes maybe just to process some of what we came away with at these conferences, hoping it will in some way help some who are listening. So, Michael, let's talk just a little bit about the MLK 50 conference first. Again, in Memphis, there were a lot of great big-name preachers. We didn't get to hear all of them because we left early to come home. We had Wednesday night services. We didn't get to hear John Piper, who preached the last preacher on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I hated I missed him. Really wanted to hear that, but we needed to get back for other responsibilities. So give me your general thoughts to sort of get us started. What do you think about the conference overall?
Yeah, you know, this was one of those conferences that just couldn't miss, man, for a lot of different reasons. I mean, it's right here in our backyard in Memphis.
Right.
It's a significant cultural event, you know, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. You know, and it was put on by the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission and the Gospel Coalition. Now, many folks may not know this, but there was a simultaneous conference going on in Memphis, also MLK 50, that was put on by the National Civil Rights Museum and some others, and so they were kind of going on at the same time, different objectives, I think.
That's right.
In that, but we chose to go to the one that was put on by the ERLC and the Gospel Coalition, and you know, I think overall, man, I think your assessment is spot on, that you know, it the conversation about racial reconciliation is it's at a fever pitch right now.
Yeah.
And you know, I think conferences like this do a couple of things for you and for me as white pastors. You know, it creates a conversation. It impresses upon us questions that we have to wrestle with, and we still are in many ways, as to what racial reconciliation looks like in our day, in our cities, in our churches. And I don't know that there is a monolithic answer to those questions necessarily. But probably because, and I'd like your take on this too, what I found in this conference and in other conversations going on subsequent to the conference is that there's not a unified black voice on these issues. There's not a unified white voice. And I feel like we do ourselves a disservice by assuming that all blacks think the same about these issues and all whites, particularly as it's been thrown around most recently, all white evangelicals think and feel the same way about these issues. And I think that's been part of the difficulty of sifting through the core messages that we heard from the speakers, for example.
I think that's one of the things that came out.
Yeah.
Was throughout all the different speakers, they clearly didn't all agree with each other. Now, not they weren't militant, you know, against each other and speaking ill of each other.
Right.
Just sort of, you know, they all come off on a little bit different. You get a different take from each one of them, which is, I don't think is a bad thing, but I agree with you. There's no real unified voice and all that. I don't know how is that even fair to say that we should have that? I don't really know.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, For one, for example, there's not a unified voice on how to understand Martin Luther King Jr.'s theology. There's not a unified voice on his moral failings and what to do with that. And so there's critics and there's champions and there's all kinds of stuff going on. And, you know, we're going to paint probably in some broad brush strokes, you know, as we assess the highlights of this. But one of the things that I found interesting from the African-American speakers was the older African-American speakers like John Perkins and Ralph West and others. Their approach to this conversation was rooted in, look how far we've come, and let's join arms together in Christian love and be kind to each other and just treat each other like Christians should treat each other. And then from the younger African-American speakers, it was, we hadn't even started this thing, and it felt a little accusatory on the history of white evangelicals, and you guys haven't figured out your history, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff that it just seemed like two different approaches to accomplishing, you know, unity. The older African Americans are like, listen, we've come a long way, we got a long way to go, but we're going to do this together. The younger guys were like, look, y'all need to get your house in order, and until you do, we ain't got nowhere to go.
That's right.
That's kind of.
I think that's fair, and I think the older guys, these are the older guys, are the guys who actually have lived through some of Martin Luther King lived through at the time, especially John Perkins.
He called him Martin from the stage.
He was a contemporary. And, you know, and he looks back with a whole different perspective. And so you got these older guys who are saying, look, we have come a long way. And it just seems to me that the two older guys, Ralph West, I thought was one of the best speakers at the conference, which I thought was really, really well done.
And, you know,
done.
I didn't know him before the conference. I didn't either. So I was very pleased
before.
To, yeah.
And I thought it was really cool because one of the most profound things that he said was, we just need to be nice to each other.
Be nice.
And I thought, you know, how simple is that? I mean, people have said that already. But really well, but in the context of what he was preaching and speaking on, it was so profound. I thought, I hope we're all listening to hear him say, look, we have come a long way. Let's learn right now how to be nice to each other and just treat each other like human beings. And I thought that was really profound. Now, let me just throw this out there too. I love Christian rap music, and I love Trip Lee. Trip Lee's a great rap artist, and I love to hear his music. He got great lyrics, got great theology. His talk was one of my least favorite.
Kind of lackluster.
I'm just saying this. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's a younger guy, and he is. And I'm not knocking his youth, but I'm just saying he has not lived through. And his basic message was, no, we're going backwards. And he just said, I don't know if y'all realize, if y'all look around, you realize we're not going forward, we're going backwards. Not at all what the other guys were saying. And I just think, I mean, his opinion is fair. I mean, he's got an opinion, he's welcome to it, and he shared his opinion. I just think some of the younger guys seem to be a little bit more militant about it, coming at it from a little bit of a negative perspective. I'm not saying it's not negative. I'm not saying there's no negatives here. There are plenty of negatives, and we could shine the light on that all day long. But I just think maybe part of the point of that whole conference was to try to shine some light on the positives rather than on the negative. And I'm okay with being honest. I don't know. I was conflicted a little bit between some of what I was hearing from some of the older African American guys and some of the younger ones. It just didn't seem to fit.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know, even some of the white speakers too, you know, didn't necessarily have the same approach.
Yeah, you're right.
As well, you know, and I think obviously this conversation is centering on answering the question: what is justice, and how do we understand biblical justice, and how do we apply biblical justice in our culture and our context? And honestly, the answers that are being given don't match up.
Yeah.
Because in many ways, you know, and Charlie Dates, when he spoke, he kind of got to the heart of this, that, you know, the Greek word group in the New Testament for righteousness also means justice. So how do you apply? And I think one of the insights from his talk for me was, it's interesting that perhaps when whites think about righteousness, we think about personal accountability. We talk about living in a certain way, but you know, blacks are really fighting for justice on a social level because obviously their history is marked with slavery and oppression and prejudice. And man, that's just a fact. And we have to really understand, even just a generation ago, two generations ago in our own country, that, you know, what was prevalent. And people like John Perkins walking through that and being able to say, listen, there is a way forward, and it's through the gospel. That I think that's going to resonate more with people who really want to live out the gospel than trying to give cultural solutions to this issue apart from Christ, apart from the gospel. Yeah. Now, Charlie wasn't doing that, but I'm just saying, when you bring in, you know, conversations about housing, you know, and I think we get down in the weeds and we're like, I'm not really sure what are we talking about when it comes to justice. You know, because I think there's a reaction to a socialistic understanding of income equality and all kinds of other things that people want to talk about. But is that an implication of the gospel? Or is that, I'm thinking, you know, because they're saying, y'all want to talk about the gospel. And even, you know, we'll talk about this in David Platt's talk and T4G. You know, y'all just want to talk about the gospel and live the gospel. And what we're talking about, we need justice.
Yeah.
And so we're on the circle, but we're on different parts of the circle.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if we're not careful, apart from the gospel, the conversation of justice looks a whole lot like revenge. Apart from the gospel. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's this idea of, we got to make things even. We got to get back at, you know, but I think that some of what's driving some of the social conversation is, and I think what's sort of where we need to answer some of these questions are we looking for gospel justice and righteousness, or are we looking for revenge and getting back, getting equality, getting all, where are we in the argument? And I think, at least, I think that the conference at least helped us, and I hope helped the entire crowd to say, okay, this needs to be a gospel issue.
Yeah,
this cannot venture off into social justice because we can't even define social justice the same way without the gospel. That's even right. We have trouble doing it with the gospel, but I think at least the conference at least helped us that way. And I was encouraged. I mean, I really was. You have a crowd. Nobody ever gave us the numbers. There were several thousand people
4,000.
There. Yeah, 4,000. There was a large population of African Americans, a large population of white guys, and I'm sure many other ethnicities that were involved, but mostly African American and white. And so I thought it was really cool, all worshiping together, all singing together, and I thought it was great. And they did some things to try to build that community of people. So I thought it was really good. They had different kinds of speakers and different emphases on what they're speaking about, but all sort of flowed from the same theme. And I do think overall the conference was helpful. I'm still struggling with some of this stuff, man. I'm still processing.
We're going to continue because until we, you know, and this is one of the things that came out of it, we've got to sit down face to face around a table and listen, but also share. I mean, how can we know what our brother is thinking and feeling unless we sit down and talk with him? You know, and I think that's important. It's important on a micro level, and these macro cultural issues of, you know, policing abuses and stuff like that, man, these are realities. You and I may not feel these realities like African American community feels these realities, but those are questions worth answering and worth talking about. You know, you talk about the gospel, and I agree with you 100%, and I think John Perkins, if he was sitting here with us, he'd say the same thing. So he just produced a book called One Blood. Mm-hmm. It's fresh off the press, and it's his kind of reflections on this whole journey. And he's a civil rights leader from Mississippi, lives in Jackson, and he's been in the fight for a long, long time.
Yeah, and even physically.
Physically. He was beaten. Oh, man, yeah.
Because of his race.
Yeah, and just has a horrible experience. In fact, his early chapters of the book say how much he hated white evangelicals in Mississippi, moved to California, got saved, And God put love in his heart to come back to Mississippi and love people through hatred and to overcome hatred.
What an incredible spirit of forgiveness.
Truly.
It really is.
From the gospel.
Yeah.
But his whole thesis in the book is the gospel, the cultural stuff's not going to help us. We've tried this. It's not. But the gospel is what's going to have to reconcile God's people in the church especially. And, you know, he makes a phrase, and this is what I'm talking about. There's not a monolithic voice in this conversation because many people would disagree with what he says. He says there is no black race, there is no white race, there's only one race, and that's the human race. But the problem is many people they're not happy with that because of what I feel like, Matt, is a creeping into evangelicalism, this flirtatious handling of intersectionality and how our differences and our distinctions, whether it's skin color or gender or preference or anything else, becomes the group identity whereby we affiliate ourselves. Here's the thing. The gospel is anti-intersectionality. How do I know this? Mm-hmm. Because there's neither Jew nor Greek,
That's right.
slave nor free, barbarian, Scythian, male, female, all are one in Christ. And the gospel is bringing people to unity where these kind of philosophical things at a university level now creeping into the church and our conversation is we're dividing ourselves according to particulars. Yeah. Now, God is a Trinity, but he's one God.
Yeah.
He is diversity in unity. And I think the church is going to have to be that way as well in some respect. But we can't keep identifying ourselves as I'm this, 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 and this. I identify myself as a disciple of Jesus Christ. Right. And therefore, I'm going to walk in love.
Yeah.
I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be kind.
Right.
And I'm not going to, you know, turn a deaf ear or a blind eye to my brother or sister's problems. It's a big deal. We need to hear our African American sisters and brothers feel what they feel in many ways.
Yeah.
We rejoice with those who rejoice. We weep with those who weep. We have to.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think you and I, part of what we're wrestling with as white pastors in particular is it's almost like whiteness in today's context is a liability. You and I didn't choose to be born white. We didn't choose to be born male. And we live out our existence as a disciple of Jesus in this way. And it's difficult to hear time and again from some voices in this conversation that being white and being male is the problem.
Yeah, I know. And I hear that sometimes. And that's become a, you know, that's being said ad nauseum, and I really get weary of hearing that. And I even heard a national black speaker even this morning on the news, and I think it actually happened yesterday. I saw it early this morning. The national black speaker, a lady, really got vocal as speaking. She was getting heckled from the audience, and she really went off on this issue of privilege, and she said, as a black speaker, she said, none of y'all in this audience have ever gone through slavery and Jim Crow laws and none of that. You realize you're a privileged people. You're a privileged people as blacks. And so I, even on that side of things, we're not all on the same page.
We're not on the same page. Yeah.
We're not all agreeing with each other here. I mean, we got, you know, some blacks and whites all disagree. We can't even agree with each other, you know. And so I totally agree with you that the gospel is going to have to be what unifies, and until we're committed to that and get away from the social, primarily social issues, we've got to get back to the gospel.
There will be implications, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the gospel always has those social implications, and I don't know. I'll just share this, and I think I'll be done. But one of the takeaways that I took away, practically speaking, from the conference is I've prayed through some things, and I've tried to reconcile some things, try to process. So just last couple weeks ago, I shared with my church what I called a 2020 vision for the years to come for our church.
I read it
for
incidentally.
The next 2 to 4 years.
That's good.
One of the last things that I put on this vision statement that I shared with my church family is I'm challenging my church. The way I worded it was to put the stamp of the gospel on racial division in our community. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that any of our churches are doing a great job of it. We're not probably doing a great job, but our church is always welcome to anybody. I mean, any ethnicity, any color, right? We don't kick people. We don't, you know, but anyway, but I don't know that we're doing I don't know that we're being intentional.
Well, let's take it a step further. I know your ministry, and I've watched you invite African American pastors to speak and to preach right. from your pulpit. So you're putting your money where your mouth is, and I think you're showing demonstrably at a pastoral level, you know, that this is an issue, and we're brothers and sisters in Christ, and we're going to do that. I mean to cut you off,
wanted
to say, you know, that vision for your church is also being modeled at a leadership level.
Well, I hope so, and I do think we have to be intentional about it. And that's one of the, and that was a takeaway from me going to the conference. I came back with a sort of a burden for my church, and what can we do? What can we do intentionally to say, all right, this is about the gospel. This is about the gospel, and we're going to intentionally try to put the stamp of the gospel on this in our community. We want to be one of those churches that says, we're not going to just let this slide by. We're not just going to let this be one of those incidental things in our community that we're not going to address or we're going to turn a blind eye to. We're going to look at it, stare it in the face, and say, what is our responsibility here? Do we have a responsibility? Yes, we do. So let's figure out what to do. And I don't know what that's going to look like in 2 years, four years,
right.
but we are going to intentionally move forward that way, and I'll be challenging my church. That was awesome. Practically that was a takeaway from me. So hopefully that ends up being a positive thing.
Well, it is already positive, and I'm really pleased to see that you do that. One of the things that might help us do that, I walked away from the conference with a number of resources books that I'm so glad that in the bookstore they had a section that had writings of Martin Luther King Jr., had Black history, Black theology, mm-hmm. because I've not really been exposed to that. I mean, I've got 3 degrees in biblical studies, but I don't have any.
I know, I'm the same way. I know.
You know, and so I bought everything, you know, and I've been reading through because, A, I wanted to read Martin Luther King Jr. for myself. He's got some significant works. I never have read them, and I bought an anthology of all of his writings and speeches and essays. And so working through that. Also, a Pulitzer Prize-winning book called "Parting the Waters." I actually found that's a three-part thing, but the first one won a Pulitzer Prize in literature and history, and it talks about the state of America in the King years, and so it kind of weaves his story through the story of America. Man, eye-opening, fascinating, mm-hmm. and troubling in many ways, just to read how America was and what was going on at that time, and so I think. For the 2020 vision you're talking about, and as I lead ministry as well, part of the equipping is to understand from whence we came, but that's also right. to not be ignorant of the writings and the history and the theology and the African-American tradition. I think it's very important. And that's been one of the critiques of From Blacks to Whites is, man, y'all, look, we're like an invisible people to you. You haven't been reading our stuff.
That's right.
And so I thought that was a great challenge, and I took
it
up.
Too. Yeah, and I can't remember who said something about that at the conference. One of the speakers.
Might have been Charlie Dates.
It may have been. Yeah. I thought it was really, really good. It was eye-opening for me to go, okay, well, that's fair, because I've not spent a lot of time reading Black theologians.
Yeah.
But they're out there. Yeah. And they have been out there for a long, long time, but I've not really spent most of the theologians that I've read are white guys and
Europeans. Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, you have a book right here in front of you that is one of those.
Interesting. I'm just started reading through this. It's called Plain Theology for Plain People. It's written by Charles Octavius Booth, mm-hmm. and it's not a difficult read. It's not long at all, 140 pages, something like that.
And it's not new either, right? This was written.
That's right. Well, I haven't looked to see when it was written. It was written in 2017. Copyright 2017. This book. Now, the original. This was originally published by the American Baptist Publication Society in 1890. So this is a
Booth was a former slave.
He was a mm-hmm. former slave, and he wrote. This theology. It's basically a systematic theology. He wrote basically for the purpose of being able to teach fellow slaves, and which was really incredible. And I've never seen this before.
Right.
And so I got a copy of it, and I haven't worked my way through it yet. But I've read the introduction, which was
by Walter Strickland.
Walter Strickland wrote it, mm-hmm. and which I thought was really, even the introduction is very helpful. But he says one of the things he says is plain theology for plain people shows Black evangelicals. That they belong in the broad evangelical tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the things, one of the reasons why this was published like this was to help people see that there are Black voices out there. And you and I are both theology guys,
right.
Which is why I was really drawn to this book is basically that systematic theology.
Right.
And it's not complicated. It's pretty simple, but really a really neat book. It's really interesting. So I'm working my way through this right now. But it's sort of the idea that everyday Christians need practical and accessible theology, and this is what he wanted for his slave brothers and sisters.
That's great.
You know. So I'm looking forward to getting into it. But that was one of the takeaways from the conference too. Was the you know the resources, the books.
And for those of that were there, you can't walk away you know ignorant anymore. I mean the writings
are there. They're there.
Take up and read.
That's right.
And I think this will advance the conversation the more white evangelicals engage, you know, what Walter Strickland says, that there's in the broader evangelical family, black voices are there. Find them, read them,
right.
And equip yourself.
And learn.
And learn, yeah.
And I appreciate what you said, and I that's one of the things that I need to do more of and take away from is the desire to learn, the desire to equip myself and to learn what is the history, what is the context of our African American brothers and sisters in America, and I have not understood nor appreciated that as much as I should have, and that's a positive that came from the conference. Let me shift gears. So let's talk about T4G.
Okay.
I wasn't there, you were, so I've just sort of seen the social media stuff out there a little bit, and I've been really intrigued to hear what you got from the conference. We didn't talk about it a lot. We didn't text back and forth a lot while you were gone. I didn't want to bother you, but I was sort of intrigued to hear what you were thinking. So,
yeah.
So give me your overall thoughts about T4G.
So Together for the Gospel takes place every other year. So this is the I think they said the seventh T4G, and you know it's the same kind of people
out of seven. How many you've been to?
Probably five.
Okay.
Yeah, and most of those I've worked as a vendor with Lifeway. You know, so I was there for the Holman Christian Standard Bible, et cetera. The last two I've gone as a pastor since I've been here at First Ripley, and man, enjoyed them tremendously. This year the theme was Distinct from the World, which I thought was going to be kind of a conversation around holiness. Mark Dever kind of started the conference. We sang about holiness. He kind of jumped into holiness. One critique, just kind of out of the gate, was the theme didn't seem to dominate the whole litany of voices that were preaching. It was a little odd, I'm going to be honest with you. And some of the conversation with brothers that were there, they're like, I'm not sure how all of this is fitting together. So we were kind of confused a little bit. The messages were good, but they just seemed kind of one-off.
Disjointed.
Disjointed. So we couldn't figure that out necessarily, but they were really good. I would say, so there were 13,000 people there. I mean, just imagine.
That's incredible.
As a conference, how many big conferences do you go to? Like Southern Baptist Convention in Dallas coming up here in a month or so.
There'll be 5,000 people
there. Yeah, 6,000 maybe, you know. And I mean, we're talking about 13,000. And then of that 13,000, 10,000 were men. So most of those men were in ministry of some kind because Mark Dever does all the stuff, stand up, you know. And it's fascinating to see. And as one of the takeaways of that kind of conference, predominantly men, the singing was incredible. So here's the scene. You simply have a piano with Bob Coughlin leading worship. No instrument other than the piano. It's him and his voice. And most of the songs were hymn-like. Not all of them, but most of them were hymn-like. And so, yeah, the old hymns, kind of, you know, familiar with and really meaningful. Some of the newer hymns written, like my Matt Boswell and the Gettys and Sovereign Grace and those things. Very, very moving and meaningful. And so, man, look, I enjoyed the singing as much as anything. You know, just worshiping. And I know this is going to sound weird and it's probably not a popular thing to say, but to hear men sing predominantly was encouraging to me as a pastor. And, you know, we try to engage our men and really get them involved. So that was really neat. Now, let's talk about our preaching for a minute. Preaching was good. So, you know, you have the four in the T4G are Albert Moeller, Ligon Duncan, Mark Dever, and C.J. Mahaney. Now, C.J. Mahaney wasn't at this conference
this
year.
I was about to ask. I didn't hear his name mentioned.
Yeah. C.J. and the Sovereign Grace churches are embattled in litigation over accusations of sexual abuse in their churches. And this is not going away. They're not, I haven't really researched, so I can't really speak to it with any sense of knowledge, but he wasn't there because of that. Last year, he wasn't going to come. He came anyway, preached and left, or the last time, but this time he didn't even come. And so, you know, they've added to this a group of preachers, John MacArthur, John Piper, Matt Chandler, David Platt, Thabiti Anyabwile, H.B. Charles preached this year. Let's see who else. Anyways, I missed a few of them while we were there, but I was really, and you know, you can find all these online if you want to go to t4g.org or something like that. They'll push you out to the links. But I want to commend to you a couple of messages worth listening to and thinking about. One of those messages was David Platt. Now, David Platt came and he preached from the book of Amos on justice, and it was really centered on race and the racial reconciliation issue. It caused a lot of conversation in the hall among brothers for the rest of the week, on social media, everything else. And I'm not going to bias that conversation. Just go and hear it and kind of decide for yourself. He had a schematic he put up on the screen that was really profound that I thought encapsulates much of what we were talking about earlier with MLK 50, how the gospel, we're talking about different things at different times. And one of the takeaways from David was the gospel may even be dividing us. Because when we're talking about righteousness as white people and justice as black people, and we're trying to get to the same issue, that we're not getting to the same issue even from the whole basic conversation of the gospel. So that was a really interesting talk. And then most people won't like this one, but Kevin DeYoung gave an hour-long lecture on the immutability of God, and it was awesome. And his practical takeaways at the end were phenomenal. But man, that's some heavy lifting, dude. And it was it's worth it just because of what it was.
I need to go listen to that. I would enjoy that, I think. And I didn't know he had done that.
Yeah, so I nerded out pretty good on that.
I got to hear that one.
And so you know, I thought that was good. Really, for me, the key Keystone sermon was Ligon Duncan. And Ligon, man, how do I put this? He just, I tweeted that he's a modern day John Chrysostom. Hey, golden tongue. I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard him preach before. Maybe I have, but I was just sitting there thinking, just as a student of homiletics, his voice, his cadence, the structure of his sermon, the power with which he was speaking from the text. He gave an expository message from the text. And then the way he brought everything together at the end, I was weeping. Now, there have only been a few sermons in my life that I've been listening to and so struck by the power and the beauty of the message that I'm weeping. There was a guy behind me that was, I mean, he was sobbing and just snot coming out of his nose. And I mean, just unbelievable move of the Spirit through this sermon, and you just got to hear it. You just got to hear how he starts in Genesis, and I just can't. You just got to hear it for yourself. Ligon Duncan, the hole in our holiness, W-H-O-L-E.
Wow,
the hole in our holiness. It was really, really profound. So I was encouraged by the preaching, and that's one of the things about this conference, Matt, is as a preacher, you kind of get away and get preached to.
That's one of the reasons I love the conferences. You get you get your spirit refreshed. You know, you get to worship because, a lot of people may not understand this, but pastors, it's hard for me. I should say this for me. It's hard for me to worship on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Although I really do try. I really do make the effort to make sure that I'm worshiping, not just concentrating on my job and what I have to do. But when you can get away, which is really, really needed for a pastor.
Right.
And I'm going to take an aside and say this. For any folks listening to the podcast that are not pastors, that are church members, you need to really make sure, if you have the opportunity at all, make sure that your pastor is taking opportunities to go get away, get refreshed, and worship. Because he doesn't get that chance to just sit and get preached to very often. So give him that opportunity.
And not as a vacation. Not as a vacation. That's something different. We're talking about.
This is part of what we want you to do. We expect you to go and let him get away regularly to be able to do that. A lot of churches don't do that.
Yeah.
They don't allow that. They don't think about it, never have thought about it.
Right.
And that's always one of the great things about a conference like that. You just sort of get renewed, refreshed, get preached to, and that's a great thing.
And, you know, the last thing I'll say about this, and we can close out the podcast, but the fellowship of brothers in ministry. So I rode up there with some local pastors in our area. And man, our fellowship was sweet,
That's good.
And we didn't really even talk about church stuff, church ministry. It was more, what's the Lord doing in your life? You know, we did talk about church and pastoral, questions and stuff going on around our ministries and whatnot. But just the fellowship of getting away with like-minded brothers and worshiping together. And man, I tell you what, I'm so thankful for the men that God has called in North Mississippi. You know, I number you among them, obviously, Matt, but just what he's doing with the coalition of pastors in our area who love the Bible, who love evangelism, who love the church and shepherding people in the church into true discipleship. I mean, it's just a revolution in our state and in our you know, region. So I was really, really encouraged by that. And conferences like that can foster those kinds of things for a man to go away, refresh and renew, kind of get filled up, recharge, come back into his place of service, and that's cool. And let it rip. So,
well, it helps. It really does. So help your pastor out.
Yeah, for sure.
help him out. Help him get refreshed.
Because look, the last thing we want to see and hear of more is pastors who aren't making it, pastors who are struggling in ministry, pastors who fail. And as we close kind of this podcast, I want to do a segment called Headlines. And Matt, would you speak to maybe a recent headline where a prominent pastor, kind of moral failure and the wreckage and carnage out of that? Would you?
Yeah, there's a headline out just this past week. Matter of fact, I think I texted you about it as soon as I heard about it while you were at the conference, T4G, and in our local Baptist, Mississippi Baptist paper, the Baptist Record. The headline's here, but it's been all over the place. Hybels, Bill Hybels resigning, Willow Creek pastorate. Bill Hybels has been at Willow Creek for decades. He's been a part of a huge movement, not just a large church, but a huge movement within pastors for a long time, mm-hmm. church leadership and seeker-sensitive type, you know, movement decades ago and all this kind of, been a huge leader and all that. And just recently, he has announced that he is resigning from his position as pastor, but also his position of training leaders. They have an institute that they run and train people. So he's stepping down from all of that, and he's actually even said that based on some counsel that he's received from, I guess, folks in the church, elders, those kind of things, that that he's going to actually stay a part of the church. He's going to remain a member of Willow Creek Church, but he is going to be leaving the ministry because of what has been termed some moral failures. Now, he has denied some of those allegations against him, but many of them come from women. I guess most of them come from women who've said he has made inappropriate advances toward them. And again, he's denied many of them, but he has said that there are instances that, you know, wisdom,
indiscretion.
Wisdom would have said he should have avoided, but he just did not avoid, and now he's resigning. So some of these allegations are still out there, and they're going to float around, and I don't know what's going to come of it. I don't know what, you know, is he going to make a statement to say, okay, yes, I did do these things. Yes, it was sexual in nature, but it does seem to be that his advances were sexual in nature toward some other women.
Wow.
And anyways, this is happening. It keeps happening.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, something I preached on last night in my church from Proverbs 5, just warned the men in our church, where the writer of Proverbs 5 just says, my son, he warns this, the writer of Proverbs warns his son to stay away from the adulterous woman and stay away from the wayward woman. And the way he describes it is, stay away from the woman who's willing to break her covenant with her own husband and break her covenant with God in order to have a relationship with you. Beware of that woman. And and so the writer of Proverbs because it's not only Proverbs 5, it's Proverbs 2, chapter 6, chapter 30. There's several chapters in Proverbs that really hone in on this. Proverbs 5, the whole chapter is about this. And he talks about beware of the adulterous woman, beware of her words, her lips may drip with honey. He says, but in the end, they're wormwood.
Yeah.
Beware of her speech is like a sharp double-edged sword that it will cut you in the end. And this is where he says in Proverbs 6, who in the world can think they can embrace fire and not get burned?
Exactly.
Matter of fact, I love this, the translation of the Christian Standard. Mm. I love at the end of chapter 6, he basically calls a man who's willing to go after a woman Stupid. And I love that. I just love the term.
Yes, sir.
I think it's perfect. It perfectly fits. He just calls a man stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, he just says, why in the world would you do that? This, how stupid is that? You know? And I think we all know that, but we have to, and I just challenged my church last night, especially the men in the church, we have to help create this environment of a healthy sexual kind of environment in a church where, you know, we're right now we're so scared of, and this is true, right? We're so scared right now in the local church of transgender issues and homosexuality and all this kind of stuff. One of the things we never even recognize anymore is adultery.
Yeah,
it's become one of those sins that it's acceptable now because we're so scared of the other big things like transgender. We're not even worried about adultery anymore. Mm. We're turning a blind eye to the effect of that adultery is having on our churches. And the I don't know, Proverbs 5 is real, it's very specific, and I preached on it last night, and I'm just saying part of Proverbs 5 is you get a little red face preaching through it, you know, because it's a little bit embarrassing because he talks about being faithful to your own wife, and
right,
he talks about physical love and sex and all that kind of good stuff. So it's a little difficult to preach through at times. But anyway, I'm saddened by headlines like that because it's happening more and more and more. But the Bible is very clear, and over and over again, beware of those kind of things. Turn and run from that kind of stuff. It can only hurt you, drag you, as the writer of Proverbs says, drag you down to Sheol. Mm. I mean, drag you down to hell. It's, you know, I don't know. It's tough, but you read stuff like that, you just know, look, we're all fallen, and we're all struggling, and we need that accountability and need that help and need to follow the wisdom that the Word gives
us. And brother, pastors don't need to be unaware of Satan's schemes. No, I mean, this is one of those things, like you're saying, but for the grace of God, there go I. But you also need to surround yourself with relationships of accountability, and you know, keep yourself unstained from the world. And like he's saying, I think it's interesting how you brought that text into it about beware of the wayward woman. That the conversation in our culture today is that let's just say someone came into this office and made an advance toward me, and I accepted that. Mm. That the burden is on me because I'm in a position of power as a pastor.
Right.
And, you know, who cares that it was the woman who came in and deceived me and seduced me or whatever. I'm in a position of power. And so you got to be very wary of all of those things. Just walk with the Lord. And a lot of that, you know, you pulled out of Proverbs 5 is delight in the wife of your youth.
That's right.
Turn your heart toward her and those kind of things. So I hope this conversation has been helpful to our listeners, you know, as we've just kind of debriefed a little bit. Nothing necessarily profound, Matt, but just some reflections from the MLK 50 conference and also from T4G 18. And, you know, we're just so thankful for all of our listeners who stick with us. And hopefully these gospel conversations encourage you in your walk with Christ. And we'll hope to see you next time on Gospel Rain.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Rain podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelrain.com.